We made this.
This is the first Christmas we've had together in years.
I love you guys. I'm making up for some lost time.
Authorities are wondering if the masked vigilante who terrorized the city's underworld is back.
The past is caught up with me.
Should we be worried?
No, it's nothing. I'll be home for Christmas.
I promise.
It's the most wonderful time.
When I wore this suit, I made a whole lot of enemies.
You're Hawkeye.
Who the hell are you?
Some people have actually called me the world's greatest archer.
Are you one of those people?
It's the most wonderful.
Hey, babe, I should be back in a day or two. Hang on a second.
With the kids jingle belling and everyone telling.
Things have gotten more complicated.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the most wonderful time. Yes, the most wonderful.
This is too dangerous. Definitely not this one.
You'll have to say definitely like that.
Some Christmas.
Welcome to Podcast 616, the podcast from the We Made This Network that's all about the Marvel Universe. I'm your host, Craig, and thankfully the Marvel Universe never gives us any break from content, so we're always going to be in your ears. We're going to give you a bit of a primer for Hawkeye, the Disney Plus series that is coming on fairly soon. Joining me to give you a bit of a lead-in for Hawkeye is Luke Winch. Hello.
Hello, Craig. How are you?
I am doing good. I'm ready to hit that bullseye. How about you?
Yes, definitely. I was absent from What If. I thought I'd just take a break from the Marvel Universe just for a little bit, but I'm back for Hawkeye because it's really interesting me. And Hawkeye's a character that I think was unfairly used at the beginning of the franchise and slowly expanded his role. So I'm very interested to see what this six-part miniseries does with him.
Yeah, so that's a good way to get into it. So he was introduced in Thor, and it wasn't really clear that it was him unless you knew who he was, interestingly. You had that bit where it's they mention Barton, and then he goes into the armory, and he stops at the gun, decides not to take the gun, just takes the bow and arrow, and then he has a few lines, and then that's his appearance in that. So how did you respond to Cast Your Mind Back? But how did you respond to his first appearance in Thor? Did you know who he was? Was it, or did it mean nothing to you when they introduced him? Was he just some guy?
Because I came into the Marvel Universe without reading the comics, I didn't know who he was. So, you know, there was this guy dressed in black. He grabbed his bow and arrow. He went up high on this nest, you know what they call his nest. And yeah, so I didn't really have a clue who he was, really. I knew that they were introducing a character called Hawkeye just from reading articles online and magazines and stuff. But I had no idea about his comic history or his origins at all. So it was just, I knew he was going to be introduced and then brought in further films. So that was literally what I knew about him when he came into Thor. There's one line that I do like where he's asking Coulson to kind of give him an order because, like, you know, I'm starting to root for this guy now.
Yeah.
So I like that kind of introduction, he knows who Thor is, and you know, that line's a good basis for him to kind of join the team.
Yeah, and says something like, should I take the shot, or are you going to send in more guys for him to beat up?
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it was an interesting introduction because it stood out that he was significant in some way because he had enough focus to be someone to watch out for, maybe. But at the same time, it's quite a subtle introduction in a way because they don't point fingers at him and say, this is Hawkeye, look out for him. It's the bow and arrow, so if you know who Hawkeye is, it'll be great. And I didn't know he was going to be introduced in Thor before I saw it as well. So it was a nice surprise for me. And obviously, I instantly knew who he was. And it contrasts the way that Black Widow was introduced in Iron Man 2, which is far more overt. Whereas in this, it was just a cameo, really, but it was to set him up. And then he appears in Avengers, which is his next major bit. He gets a bit short shrift in Avengers. He spends most of the film mind-controlled and acting as a villain, which is a shame for him, I suppose. But it calls back to his villain roots. He started life in the comics as an Iron Man villain. So that's what they were referencing there, I guess.
Even though he does get a bit of short shrift in Avengers, we do get a good idea about his history with Natasha and the fact that he was, when he worked for S.H.I.E.L.D., he was hired to go and kill Natasha, wasn't he? But he changed his mind and brought her in instead. So there's a good look at his history. We also get an idea about his, like, his morals and his codes because, you know, he was ordered to go and kill Natasha, but he changed his mind so that, you know, he's got certain lines he won't cross at this point, which is very interesting because when we get to Endgame, he's very much crossed those lines for, you know, for reasons that we'll get into. So I liked how they introduced that into it. But yeah, he does spend most of the film as a Loki zombie, which is a bit unfortunate. And I'm not sure Jeremy Renner really enjoyed his time on that film, and I think one of his conditions about returning to Age of Ultron is, you know, I'd like a bit more to do rather than just do what I had to do in Avengers.
You say that as if Jeremy Renner has any clout on what they'll do with him. I mean, I guess Joss Whedon said, I'll make it up to you, when he did Ultron, but I don't think if Jeremy Renner had said, I'm not coming back unless you give me more to do, I don't think anybody at Disney would have been like, yeah, whatever.
I mean, he'd probably signed a 5-movie contract anyway, so I'm not sure he'd be able to get out of it without any legal struggle in court.
Yeah, it'd be one of those things where someone at Marvel or Disney would be like, you'll do what we tell you. you have no say here. You're not Robert Downey Jr. No one's coming to these films to see Hawkeye, okay? Stay in your lane, Renner. I don't know what the ins and outs of that are, but I do agree with you that you get a sense of his morality, and you start to see a bit of his friendship with Natasha in that film as well, because when he has his brain fixed after he's hit in the head, it's Natasha he spends time with.
Yeah.
And she's the one that helps him, like, sort himself out and gets him ready for action, which is good. I did enjoy their friendship. It's one of those things where you end up adding more to it than actually exists in the films, because there isn't really a lot of time. It's like we say on the preambles to all these shows, we don't really know these characters that well, actually, in the context of the films, because they're never the focus. They don't have a lot of screen time. So the Natasha Clint friendship, you get a sense of it, but there's not an awful lot of coverage of it. But there's enough for it to be, yeah, this exists and it's real and it means something to them.
Yeah, I think me and you talked about this when we were talking about Winter Soldier and the Falcon, and those very short scenes that they have together does a lot. It has a lot to do in a very short amount of time with minimal dialogue. And they do that here with Natasha and Clint. And I like the fact that in the final battle scene, when Natasha's like, this reminds me of Budapest. And he's like, we have a very different view of what Budapest was like. So you get a real good sense that they've been on missions together. They've got a banter together. And it's a very effective way of putting across that they have history and they have a friendship together.
Yeah, and I really like his use in the battle as well, because one of the things about team superhero stuff, there wasn't really a lot of it at the time, but for example in X-Men you don't see them teaming up very often, whereas in Avengers it was very much this is your purpose, this is what you can do, this is how you bring your skills, and the way that Cap identifies what everybody can do and gives them a job. And so it's with Hawkeye, it's like, right, you've got a good eye, so you get up high and you tell us what's going on. And he does. It's the, you know, Thor's taking on a squadron over here, there's this happening over here. He's telling people what to do and where to go because he can see it all. And they establish that early in the film where it's like, I see better from a distance, and he's up there watching.
Yeah, he has some pretty cool things to do, actually, in the Avengers battle at the end. And it makes up for his time as a Loki zombie. So I really enjoyed what he does, and he has some fun with it. And we get to see some of his trick arrows, which is always good fun.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll get to see some of them in this miniseries that's coming up. So, yeah. Yeah, good fun in Avengers. And I'm glad he gets an expanded role in the next films as well.
Yeah. And he runs out of arrows in Avengers.
He does, yeah.
Yeah. Which doesn't seem to happen awful lot with people with bows and arrows. Bows and arrows are just cool weapons, aren't they? They're just...
Yeah.
They're much cooler than anything else.
Yeah, Green Arrow never seems to run out of arrows. Like, he just keeps taking them out with quivers. Like, well, when are they going to run out?
Yeah, he runs out in Crisis and Infinite Earths, actually. That's what kills him.
That's true, yeah.
But, yeah. It's, yeah, Legolas as well. He doesn't...
Spoilers really if you haven't seen a four or five year old crossover event now.
Yeah, when was it? It was a couple of years ago. 2019, yeah, I think.
2019, yeah. Okay. Yeah, maybe so. Not four, but a while back.
Yeah, but Arrow's finished. It's fair game. Yeah, as far exactly, as I'm concerned. Yeah. And relevant to anything this, we perhaps. Want. Yeah. Age of Ultron. He gets a much more expanded role. They establish that he has a family. They give him a connection to Wanda as well through a bit of a parental, pseudo-parental connection that they give them. Mm. They try to do it a bit with Pietro as well, but Pietro's an afterthought, so it doesn't really count. But there's that bit where it's, these are punk kids and I've got to take care of them. That's his focus there. And the stuff on the farm was really good, where it shows you his wife and kids and even Natasha's relationship with them as well. It's weird to see a Black Widow be so like cozy with young kids. I was a bit unsettled by it the first time. I was like, okay, that's not what I expected. And even when they show up at the farmhouse, these are agents. These are tiny agents.
My favourite scenes in the entire of Age of Ultron is, one is the party scene, which I think is just brilliant.
Yeah.
And my other favourite scene is all the stuff on the farm and introducing Hawkeye's family in it. What it does really well, and it really sets up his character arc for the rest of the phases, is that, you know, it humanizes him more than any other Avenger, I think. And it also grounds the Avengers. He's like the grounding that the Avengers needs, and you get this very normal way of life on the farm with his wife and his kids. It's just so funny to see Tony Stark in his Iron Man gear and Thor with his hammer in this very normal American kind of dream life type of way. And it's a really interesting scene, and it does a lot. And what comes out of that is that he becomes the glue of the team in a way. He holds them together. And as you said, he motivates Wanda. He kind of puts across that, you know, being part of the Avengers is a duty, and it's a duty that he takes very seriously. He calls it, I have to do my job. He calls it his job. So, you know, if you go out those doors, you are an Avenger. You are part of the team. You are an employee of the Avengers. So it's a
but you're
really
not getting
interesting.
Paid. Just
yeah,
to be clear.
Yeah.
We're not going to pay
yeah,
you, yeah. But you work for us.
It's voluntary, but you work for us.
Yeah.
But what it does is it really gives Hawkeye a position in the team, a very strong position, and is very important in holding them together.
Yeah, and that works really well. I think that human touch, so to speak, is necessary, at least at that point in the phases of, you know, grounding everything, because the Avengers is, or was at that point, quite an outlandish concept. You know, the first film brought them all together, and that was the first time it had ever been done, and it was crazy. But the second time, it's, okay, how do we expand that, and how do we still keep it relevant? So, yeah, you've got a guy that just needs to go back to his wife and kids. That's about as simple as it gets. But also, it gives him that something to lose aspect. And the entirety of Age of Ultron really sets up the fact that Hawkeye might die because he's the one injured in the opening battle. Then he has the most to lose, and they make it look like he's about to die, but then Pietro saves him. So it's a bit of a bluff on Joss Whedon's part, which he's kind of famous for doing. Now he's more famous for never getting to work ever again, but that's a different story. Yeah. Let's not go into that. But it did weirdly set up the fact that he was going to die. And as you say, that speech he gives to Wanda was really good. It's like, the city is flying and I have a bow and arrow. This doesn't make sense. This is crazy. But I'm going to go out there and I'm going to shoot some robots with arrows because that's what I can do.
Yeah, it's his first attempt at a motivation speech and he kind of blunders through it. But he does well and it works, which is great.
Yeah, well, it's that whole, you step out those doors, you're an Avenger. I like that line. I think it's really powerful.
It is, I love it.
Yeah. You stay here, you're good. I'll send your brother to come find you. It's that, I'm not going to force you to do this. I'm just going to give you a choice. And it's him parenting Wanda in a way. And that is really good. And there's a bit of a friendship stuff with Natasha in that film. Not as much as there could have been, but it's the bit where she gets kidnapped, which is a bone of contention that a lot of people have for the film. But he's the one like, do you have her? Do you have eyes on her? Where is she? And he's the one that's like deeply concerned. And he uses some old school spy stuff to find her as well, which is pretty cool.
And I like the way that his relationship with Wanda is carried on to the next Avengers film, or 2.5 as they call it.
Avengers 2.5, Civil War is when we next see him, He's actually only had 5 appearances, really, which is weird if you think about it, because he's been so prominent that he's not. It's weird that he hasn't appeared that often.
Yeah, it's amazing how much impact certain characters have when they have minimal time. I was watching the assembled documentary on Disney Plus last night about Loki, and they said that out of all the films he's been in, he's only actually had about 2 hours screen time.
Yeah.
And you think of the impact that that character has had and the following and the cult that's around that character. It's amazing that there's minimal screen time, he's had that much of an impact. And, you know, even though Hawkeye isn't as big and impactful as Loki, it is the same thing. He has very few screen time, but he is a very memorable character.
And in Civil War, he is on Team Cap, and there's that bit where he goes to get Wanda. That makes sense. They have that connection, so he's the one that goes to get her, and he says, Cap asked for my help, so I'm here. So it's that loyalty. If Captain America says jump, I say how high, which turns out to be a big mistake for him because he gets put in the raft, which is pretty harsh. It's a pretty harsh imprisonment for them.
Yeah, there's a line in Civil War which I think is brilliant, which also plays to the fact that he's the glue of the team, and he basically says, I'm gone for like 5 minutes and it all goes to shit. So it just shows that they need Hawkeye just to keep everyone's like temper down and keep everyone kind of together rather than having an infighting.
Yeah, and he's the one that during the battle at the airport, he's the one that suggests, look, we're not getting anywhere here. Some of us might have to lose. If you're going to get out of here, we're going to have to, you know, sacrifice ourselves, in effect. So that was a nice touch. And there's little bits that he has in Civil War, just little bits of banter here and there. The bit where he talks to Stark and it's like, how have you been? It's like, I took up golf. It's like, played 18, shot 18, I just can't seem to miss.
and Natasha kind of teamed up to fight each other, but it's all very playful because, like, you know, we're still friends, right?
Yeah.
So
depends on how hard you hit me. And it's the when he says to T'Challa, I'm Clint, he's like, I don't care. It's brutal.
The best part of Civil War, full stop, is that bit. Brilliant. I don't care. I don't care who you are.
Yeah. Like, no one cares who Hawkeye is. He has to just go through life.
It's about the
no
most
one's favorite
meta
Avenger.
Line in the entire film.
Yeah. That's the kind of problem with Civil War in a way, is that battle is weirdly low stakes because no one's trying to kill each other, obviously. They're just dancing, in effect. They're just beating each other up for no reason. And that's why Clint is just trying to banter with the other side, because I'm not taking this too seriously. It's not a big deal. We're just going to trash an airport, which is essentially a terrorist attack. But let's not worry about that. Wanda is going to destroy a lot of people's cars that they saved up and paid a lot of money for. But it doesn't matter.
Luckily, it was a vacant airport, so no humans were harmed in this brawl.
Nope. We can't have collateral damage at all anymore. It's not a thing. Apart from when half the universe gets wiped out. That's different.
Yeah.
I like when he gives Stark a hard time when he comes to visit them in the raft.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the futurist, everybody. Watch your back. He's going to break it or whatever it is. It's just a like really cutting remark that he makes.
Yeah, I mean, he feels incredibly betrayed by someone he's been very close with for a long time. And I think it really gets to Hawkeye, that kind of betrayal that they have, and he's very angry with Tony Stark at that point. And I think, again, it's, you know, I think he is the most human of all the characters, really. He's representing the audience in a way, I think. And I was annoyed with Tony Stark in that film. You know, his decisions that he makes, you know, he makes some very bad decisions that he believes are right, but we know as an audience member that they're not particularly great. So I like the way Barton is a kind of conduit in that way.
Yeah, although the Sokovia Accords, it's a bigger discussion, but I don't think they ever flesh out what they are all that well. So I don't think that either Stark or Cap come across all that well in that film, because I don't have enough information to know what the right side of it is. So it's that whole signing the Accords thing. Okay. And does Hawkeye really count? I mean, he's not a superhero.
Well, he's part of the team, isn't he? I think the Accords means everybody in the Avengers team, even though he's not superpowered in any way. But
yeah. But does it also cover other superpower beings that aren't in the Avengers? It kind of suggests that it does, but not quite. It's, I don't know. It's pretty woolly. They've not really explained it very well. And in theory, they're still around, but they're not doing anything with them. So they were just manufactured to essentially get the Avengers split in two and fighting each other. That's all they were. And they weren't really thought out as much as they could have been, which is a shame. Because I think with more information, it could have been an interesting back and forth. And you would have got a better sense of what people like Clint think of it. Because it's just, his perspective is just, I'm loyal to Cap. That's it.
Yeah, the Accords, really, when you boil down to it, is a MacGuffin to motivate the characters in certain ways. And it's basically there to split the team in half.
Yeah. And outside of the big two, you don't really get a sense of how the other characters react to them as such. You get little bits and pieces, but not too... Nothing too major, really.
And of course, the Accords puts Clint under house arrest, which is why he's absent from Infinity War.
Yeah, they mentioned that him and Scott, they took a deal that involved involved whatever it was. So he was wearing his little anklet that tracks his movements. And it's good for him, as he has a big farm to rattle around on, whereas Scott had his tiny little house to rattle around in that he wasn't allowed to leave. So Clint got...
It's basically the writers going, these two actors aren't available, we're going to write them out.
Well, I don't know if it was Jeremy Renner wasn't available, it's just we're not going to put him in this film. I think it was just
a narrative decision more than anything else. I don't think it had anything to do with availability.
Yeah, he's not in Infinity War. And I remember going up to that, all the speculation, what do you think Hawkeye's doing in this film? Well, nothing. He's just not there. He's at home. He's sitting this one out.
Yeah, but it makes for a very powerful opening for Endgame, though.
Yeah, I really like that opening. It's just so harsh and brutal, where he's teaching his daughter how to shoot, and then she's gone, and they're all gone.
Yeah, it's a really brutal, shocking way to start it, and of course sends him on his dark side quest, as it is, as Ronin. Is it Ronin?
I think. Yeah. It's not actually mentioned in the film. He's not known as that, but I think he might be in the TV show. I think they'll have given them that name in the media, maybe. Yeah. But yes, that's what he does. He goes off and decides to kill a bunch of gangsters or whatever, because it's not fair that Thanos took my family and you guys get to survive. So as far as I'm concerned, you don't get to survive. It's like, they get Thanos, you get me. That was...
Yeah.
It's quite cool. And he's really brutal as well. It's just the... I mean, brutal by Disney standards, I suppose. But I like that sequence where he's hunting those gangsters. It's really well done.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I mean, you know, he's lost his family. He's lost his second family, or he thinks he may have lost most of them. So he's just consumed with rage and anger and vengeance. So he's just going to kill any bad guy that he can hunt down. But yeah, those scenes in it. Is it Shanghai that they're in?
I think it is, yeah.
Am I? Yeah. Those scenes are fantastic. I love the way they're shot. You get that moodiness with the rain and all the neons. It's very kind of neo-punk-esque kind of look to it. But but you get an idea that that Barton is a changed man.
Mm.
Very much so.
And he gets a bad haircut and a tattoo, like sleeve terrible tattoo.
Haircut. Terrible haircut.
Yeah. Just no one's around to tell him. He just kills everyone that tells him that it's a bad haircut.
I'm an angry man. I'm going to shave the sides of my head off.
There's a recklessness to him in Endgame as well. It's the, when it's like, we need someone to test the time travel thing, it might not work. And he's like, I'll do it. Whatever, I don't care. And then he does. And then he goes back and he gets to see his family, sort of. Or he hears his family, but he doesn't quite get to see them. It was a nice touch as well.
Yeah, that's quite an emotional part of the film, I thought, actually, when he gets to hear more than see his family members that he believes are dead. But yeah, and again, he's willing to sacrifice himself as well, isn't he, when we get to the part with him and Natasha deciding who goes for the Soul Stone.
Yeah, yeah. Who's more motivated to kill themselves? That's what that sequence is.
Yeah, it's an interesting scene because I know it missed the mark emotionally for a lot of people, but I found that scene quite emotional to watch Natasha die. But the first time I watched it, I truly didn't know who was going to go over. It was quite a tense scene to me. I didn't know whether it would be Barton going over or Natasha, because I hadn't read any spoilers. I don't think any of the articles or Bumford spoilt it. So it was quite a tense scene, I think.
Yeah, and this whole Soul Stone thing, it's like they've been sent to get the Soul Stone, and it's, okay, one of them ain't coming back from this, surely. Yeah. There's no other way to get it. We know that from the last film. It demands a sacrifice. And they get sent because they have the closest relationship, because no other two Avengers could go, because they maybe don't care enough about each other in that way. Like, who's the Hulk going to throw over? No one cares.
Well, when he's a Hulk, he's not going to care, isn't he? No. it's just going to throw anyone over.
Well, I guess Hulk and Natasha would be one. They could be because they have that connection. But, Steven Stark? Nah. They won't care that much about each other. So it could only be them two. And you had that line where it's... I don't think it's meant to be read in this way, but it's... it's like the ship is on autopilot, and that's what they're referring to. And it's like, all they need to do is not fall out.
Yeah.
So they have to make sure they're still friends when they get to Vormir.
Yeah. It's quite tragic for Clint, though, because even when Natasha dies, which is Clint not only has to live with Natasha's death, but he has to live with everything he's done as Ronan. So he's got this huge guilt and shame, which I don't know whether they're going to bring this into the new series, but he's got a lot of guilt and a lot of shame to live with for his actions and what he's done, and then to kind of live with that as a family member again, as a husband and a father. So it makes for a very interesting exploration into the character. Whether they do that or not with a TV series, I don't know, but it'll be interesting to see if they do.
Yeah, well, that death scene, as you say, I find it quite emotionally striking as well, and you get the sense that Natasha was happy to sacrifice herself, one, because she's been struggling to hold everything together for 5 years, and two, because she probably recognises that we succeed, he gets his family back, and the last thing that his kids need is to find out that their dad died bringing them back, whereas she doesn't have anyone in that way. She has the Avengers, and in theory she has Yelena, as we now know, but she doesn't have anybody counting on her in the same way as Clint does. So I think from her point of view, the sacrifice makes a lot of sense, because she knows what he's trying to get back and she wants him to be there to experience that.
Yeah, exactly. He wants to kill himself because he can't live with the shame, whilst she's actually doing it for a much more positive reason, which is she wants his girls to have a father.
Yeah.
So hers is the more honourable sacrifice.
Yeah, for sure. And I love the reaction as well when they're sitting by the lake. People say that they don't get a proper funeral for Natasha, and that's true. It's Stark that gets the big send-off, so to speak. But they have that bit by the lake, and it's like, does she have any family? Yeah, us, says Steve. And he's enraged. And Thor's like, we have the stones, we can do whatever we want. And he's like, well, you go take your hammer, go fly and speak to the guy with the red face, and you tell him that. And she's dead, just deal with it. And like he's very passionate at that point, and I really like I really like that journey that he takes, I suppose. And then he also gets the emotional hook when the people come back, because it's his phone that goes off and it's his wife's number that is still somehow working after 5 years. He's just kept paying the bill.
Yeah. Yeah, his reaction, though, when he hears a voice on the phone is particularly moving.
Yeah, and then he's running about with a gauntlet. It's like, I need rid of this. I'm just a guy with a bow and arrow. So someone to take this off me. And then T'Challa's like, Clint, give it to me. He's like, he knows his name. He does care.
Yeah, he does. That's brilliant. I love that. Yeah, he's quite active in the last big battle. He's quite an active player, so that's good to see. But yeah, they give him a lot of good one-liners and some good action to kind of deal with as well. So that's great.
Yeah, yeah, and you see him reunite with his family at the end, and he has a nice moment with Wanda by the lake. Where it's like they both would have wanted this or whatever it is he says.
Yeah, I think he says it. I wish there was a way that we could let Natasha know that we won. And yeah. Wanda goes, she knows. She knows.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's good. He's been used well, I think, throughout. Perhaps overlooked by some, but not so much. But he's had a good run.
Yeah, definitely. I think once his family was introduced, I think that was really the genesis of the expansion of his character. Because before then, he was just like this cool guy with a bow and arrow with some one-liners. But once you had the family introduced, it really brought some elements in that they use very well throughout all the rest of the films. And will probably be the central focus for the TV series that's coming up.
Yeah, so on to the TV series. We had the trailer. We've had a couple of trailers. I've only watched one of them, though, because that's enough for me. I'm okay with just one trailer. I don't need much more than that, because I'm already going to watch it. So I can only really talk about the first trailer. I doubt that there's much extra in the other ones. Although I think Linda Cardellini's in one of them, isn't she? She's in one of the trailers.
Yeah, I watched them both. Apart from her character, there's not a lot of difference. There's maybe 10 seconds of new footage, but the gist of it is very much the same. So I think you're all right just watching the one, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. And based on the first trailer, I get a proper sense of what the show is going to be about. Actually, it reminds me of Arrow in a way. He comes back after 5 years and he's looking to get his humanity back, or he'll be forced to get his humanity back by circumstances, because there is a lot of focus on the 5 years, what he did for those 5 years and the lines he crossed, as you say. So yeah, I think it's going to be a big theme about him. How am I able to go back to just doing Christmas with my family and all this stuff after everything I've done? And it looks like his past will be coming back to haunt him in some way. Whether it'll be some gangster that doesn't like that they killed another gangster coming after him or something like that. Yelena's going to be coming after him, presumably in this show.
The post-credit scene, isn't there, on Black Widow, where Valentina makes her believe that Clint is killed Natasha. So that's going to be an interesting
element. Which, kind of, but yeah.
Loosely.
Yeah. I can't wait to see him explain it to her. It's like, no, I didn't kill her. We had a fight over who was going to kill themselves.
Yeah. We were on another planet. There was a guy with a red face, and he basically said one of us has to die.
Yeah. We're also kind of in another universe, but let's gloss over that.
Yeah, and Yelena's going to go, oh, shut up, and just try and kill him anyway.
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah, but I get a sense as well that because it's set in the holiday season, it's going to air, I think, in Thanksgiving in America.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a very much Clint needs to get home for Christmas in time kind of vibe to it, which I think would be good fun. Almost like a really violent, badass Chris Rea. So, you know, he's got to get home for Christmas in time, you know, on time. And as you say, all these maybe gangsters or this criminal element that he pissed off as his time as Ronin is going to come back and make his journey home a little bit more difficult.
Yeah, and there'll be a contrast between the sort of wholesomeness of Christmas and the darkness of his history and the way back to his humanity. I think they'll do a good job with that. It seems that the theme is clear from the trailer as far as I'm concerned. I don't know if that's how it will actually shape out, but it does seem like it's going to be about him struggling to be a person again, because he spent so long just in this murderous haze.
Yeah, I think so. And the way the trailer has been edited with the Christmas music, it gives me the impression it's going to be quite lighthearted in places as well, and very funny, quite silly. And how they balance that with the darkness of who he was and you know, as you said, trying to be a person again. It's a balance that would be quite difficult to get right, I think. Mm. So it's going to be interesting to see how they can kind of balance those two elements, because the trailer is very much a Christmas movie type vibe.
A bit diehard in a way. I got that kind of vibe from it as well.
Yeah, I got a diehard vibe as well.
Which I suppose is deliberate.
Yeah, and it seems much more street level than the other miniseries that we've got. You know, we had The Falcon and Winter Soldier, which is quite street level, but you had very global scale to it as well. The Wanda thing was very, it was quite internal with the expression of grief, but you also had a very external factor with you know, with everything going on outside. So I think this is going to be quite a internal struggle, but also street level gangster hand-to-hand combat type thing, rather than this a much larger scale. It's going to be contained in one city by the looks of it as well.
Yeah. And I do get an Arrow vibe from it as well, which is impossible not to make that connection because, well, they both use bows and arrows and they have a dark past. So it's, the connection is already drawing itself.
You have failed this Christmas.
It would be great if he says that. I hope he does. it's interesting that I'm trying to be a family man, but also I've got all this stuff catching up with me. And then you've got the Kate Bishop relationship. So this show is going to be based on the very celebrated Matt Fraction Hawkeye run, which I've read and is very, very good. They've even got the dog, Pizza Dog, he's called in the comic. He's on the poster that I saw, so they're really leaning into that. And yeah, if they're going to adapt it, I don't think it will be as one-to-one an adaptation as people might be expecting, because nothing in the MCU is ever quite a one-to-one adaptation. It's, you know, they make changes and they alter things and they mess around with things. And I think they will here, because this Hawkeye isn't anything like that version of Hawkeye, really. So that's fine. And they're introducing Kate Bishop, which that comic was largely about her too. So there'll be another pseudo-parental influence there, I'm guessing.
Yeah, some mentorship going on. So, yeah. I mean, is she basically going to be put in place to replace Clint? I mean, is he going to retire in this miniseries? Who knows?
Yeah, it's funny, in the comics there's just two Hawkeyes and they just constantly get confused because they both go by Hawkeye.
Yeah, I'm wondering if this miniseries is literally going to be the goodbye to Clint Barton. Maybe it's his swan song to say goodbye to that character and introduce the new Hawkeye, Kate Bishop.
Yeah, he goes off into the sunset to live on his farm with his family and then, don't ever call me again. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm just going to live on my farm.
Yeah, it'd be nice for him to have a nice happy ending. Cap has a nice happy ending. So it'd be nice for him to have one as well, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And it'd be interesting to see what the Kate Bishop situation is. I don't know if that second trailer reveals where she came from. She just talks about being the best archer in the world, which is a bit of a joke, I suppose, that the way they frame it. It's like, I'm the best archer in the world, are you?
Yeah, I did a little bit of look into how they're approaching her character for the TV series, and it looks like she draws the attention of Barton by masquerading as Ronin. So she's going to masquerade as Ronin for a while, and that's going to basically have Clint go, what's going on here?
Yeah, because I was wondering if she was going to be inspired by Hawkeye's example and wants to emulate him, and then who would want to do that? Nobody's favourite Avenger. Why would you choose this one?
Yeah, and the fact that she's emulating and praising Ronin's probably not the best way of going around things, since Ronin was not the most moral of men at that time.
Yeah. So I guess he's going to maybe teach her about not crossing a line. Maybe she's at the point where she wants to kill someone and he says to her, no, don't do that. You can't come back from that. That's not something you should be doing. You should just be firing arrows into people's shoulders so that they can never use their arm again, but don't kill them.
Yeah, and using trick arrows.
Yeah, use your trick arrows. Get a boxing glove arrow, which is something Green Arrow has, not Hawkeye, but do that. Just, I don't know. Yeah, it's an inherently lethal weapon, so it'd be interesting to see. I didn't know about the masquerading as Ronin thing. I don't know what I thought she was going to be introduced as. But I like the idea, and it seems that the Marvel Universe is, or the MCU is, starting to do a bit of a legacy thing, as in we're kind of grooming the next generation of these heroes. So We've got a new Hawkeye, we'll get Ironheart, we'll get whoever.
New
Shang-Chi
Thor.
And all these people. Yeah, a new Thor. And it's going to be, yeah, we're, these things are becoming mantles that are getting passed to people. We've got a new Black Widow now, kind of, probably. And
yeah.
So the next configuration of the Avengers, if they ever get around to it, which they probably will look very different.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's what the comic books do, isn't it, really? They change characters, they have mentorship for younger upcoming heroes, and they replace the older ones. So it's a thing, it's a recycling of superheroes that always happens in comics. And
then people bitch and moan, and they bring them back, the old ones.
What have you brought him back for?
Yeah. It's like, no, we can't be having a black version of a superhero I like. Give us the old white one back, please. And then they're like, well, nobody's buying comics, so I guess we will. That's the endless cycle. But I think Kate Bishop is a well-regarded character, probably because she's not replacing the original Hawkeye, I suppose, but she is good. From what I've read of her, she's a very good character. And I'm looking forward to seeing her brought to life here, especially played by Hayley Steinfeld as well.
Yeah, I have read that she underwent some serious training, so I think we're going to see quite a good action hero thing from her, and I think she did a lot of her own action sequences and stunts as well, so it'll be interesting to see what they do.
Yeah, there's a certain physicality with the bow and arrow that you need to nail.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think Jeremy Renner does really well with it. The way he moves is very... I don't know. Balletic, I suppose. Is that a way?
Yeah, balletic. Sinuous.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he's got some moves, does Renner. Because I guess some of it will be a stuntman, but he's definitely firing the bow and arrow. Or at least he's holding the bow while they CGI in an arrow. That's probably what's happening.
Yeah, there's a shot in the trailer which emulates one of the shots in the first Avengers film when he's on the building and he kind of jumps off backwards and flips around in the air, and there's a shot of him and Kate doing that at the same time. So I think we're going to see some good, like, iconic shots that we've seen throughout the franchise brought to life again in this in this TV series.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I am
really looking forward to it.
Kate Bishop would be interesting to see brought to life, because she will play a big role following this, I think.
Yeah.
As well.
And Jeremy Renner's comic timing, I think, is brilliant, so it should be quite funny as well if the writing lands.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing that. I've always liked Hawkeye. I always liked him in comics as well. He's very well done there sometimes. He's had a weird history. There was a point where he decided to give up being Hawkeye and he became Giant Man for a while. That's a strange one. Yeah, he just did that. I don't know why, he just did. And then he went back to being Hawkeye again, and he's interacted with every Marvel hero you can think of, and I'd quite like to, I'd quite like to see him interact with, like, Tom Holland's Peter Parker, because he's the dad of the group, so he could, like, Peter Parker's always looking for a new dad. There's Hawkeye for you.
Come join the family for Christmas.
Yeah. Maybe they'll mention why he wasn't there for Wanda when she needed him or needed someone. Maybe they won't. I suppose it doesn't really matter. I would like to see it addressed, though, because they have set up that connection.
It would be nice. I don't know whether they will, but it would be nice. I'm with you on that one. I think it would be nice to see that because of the relationship that was established in Ultron and Civil War.
Yeah, the Hawkeye series is on pretty soon, so it'll be talked about on Podcast 616 intermittently by different people. It'll be every episode covered, and it's starting with two episodes, which is cool. So it's really only on for 4 weeks or something, 5 weeks.
Yeah, I think me and Tony are doing the first episode, I think, or the first two episodes. I think that's how it works.
Cool. I'm guesting on number 5, I believe. Okay, so have you anything else to say on Hawkeye before we go? Because I've covered everything I wanted to cover.
No, I think we've covered everything. I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a nice treat running up to Christmas. I'm looking forward to the race to get home for Christmas in time whilst battling enemies from his past, training Kate Bishop and dealing with the dog. So it'll be an interesting and hopefully very fun 6 episodes.
Yeah, and an Avengers musical. Don't forget that. There is an Avengers Broadway
musical. Looking forward
to that. Yeah, that should be interesting. Because I think there's a song that they might have released, or they've released some of, I don't know.
I think there is, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, I should have looked it up. But I'll find out when I watch the show. I don't want to be so immersed
exactly,
in all these
things.
You
want to find out in the show, yeah.
It's, I find that problem in general with marketing. Sometimes I go into something knowing almost everything about it, and I'm like, that sucks. You know,
yeah.
As we keep talking about on this with the upcoming Spider-Man movie, it's like, there are some surprises there that I would quite like to remain surprises that might not happen. But at the same time, when I see it in the cinema, I'll be like, all right, cool. That was a thing that I knew about. Brilliant.
Mm.
You know, surprises don't seem to really exist anymore, unfortunately. Maybe this will surprise me. Who knows? We'll see what they do. Okay, so where else can you be found on the worldwide internet?
You can find me on Twitter at Luke_Winch. I am on the We Made This podcast network on various shows. Observing the Pattern is my Fringe podcast that has the season 3 has come to an end. The last episode will be airing just before this one, and then we're taking a break and coming back in February for season 4 of that. Currently doing Rarely Going, which is our Star Trek animated podcast. We are currently covering Prodigy, you and I, Craig. I've got an episode of that coming out this weekend, which is episode 4 with Brandy, so that'll be good fun. Make It So as well, but that is currently on hiatus until February. That'll be coming back for season 2 of Star Trek Picard, and that's where you can find me at the minute.
Very comprehensive. Yeah, so I can be found podcast 616 intermittently. I'll be back for episode 5, as is currently the plan of Hawkeye. And also I'm on Rarely Going, which, as you just said, we're both doing, kind of. Although I'm not back on that for a while because our Lord and Master decided that we deserved some time off because it's been quite intense with Lower Decks and stuff. But yeah, covering Prodigy, which I'm loving. I think it's a contender for my favourite modern Star Trek show, but we'll see how it shapes out once the season progresses with its long breaks and all that weird stuff. So,
oh yeah, long Christmas break, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be crazy, but that's the way it is. But yes, that's where I can be found on this network. Outside of this network, you can find me on Neil Before Blog, which is a nerdy reviewing blog. It's on Facebook and Twitter under Neil Before Blog or neilbeforeblog.co.uk. At the moment, I'm covering Legends of Tomorrow, and I will be covering The Flash, which starts next week as we record. So by the time this is out, it'll probably be the first episode of that. I'm also going to be covering Discovery when that starts, for my sins, so I'll be doing that. And there'll be some other stuff. I'm doing Doctor Who as well, because that's currently still on. So, yeah, doing little bits and pieces on Neil Before Blog. There's an attached podcast called Neil Before Pod. And the next release we're doing is our What If episode, which is currently in the editing suite for me. I haven't finished it yet, but I will. So that's what's coming up there. And on Twitter, you can find me personally under Nemesis4909. And now it's time for my legal obligation, where I comment that it's not a Star Trek reference, or didn't start life as one. It was a Resident Evil reference and then became a Star Trek reference eventually when Nemesis was released, which is great, I suppose. Yeah, all my universes align. We just need one in the Marvel universe and the DC universe, and then I'm set. I'm well covered, which will happen eventually, I'm pretty sure. But yes, that's where you can find me. As for the network, you can find it on Twitter under WMT_network, I believe. That is the Twitter handle for it. Or just type in We Made This on Twitter, you'll find it. And wemadethisnetwork.com is the website. You can find it on there. You can chuck in a couple of bucks for the Patreon if you're so inclined to help the network keep the lights on. And Hawkeye isn't all we're discussing, so if you stay tuned after I finish talking, you'll be able to hear a bunch of other things that are going on in the network. But until next time, just keep trying to hit that bullseye.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast.
So you know how you were both talking about the attractive women and how you spotted a particular one that you liked, etc, etc. Would you like to know what I put in my notes?
Go on then.
Yeah.
Love the Cuban heels.
They're very nice heels. And the fact he mentioned in the behind the scenes later on there, was it a size too small?
Yes.
Yeah. Worth it for Cuban heels. For me, yeah. I'm 6'1", which is ever so slightly above average. If I get a pair of Cubans, I'm 6'3", and I look like a god. Yeah. I f-ing love Cuban heels.
pick a disc.
The Steps formula at that time was player things. If there's another verse, the Fae'll get it. If they want a little bridge or something like that, they might give it to Hank or Lisa possibly. But the hook and everything else would have been Claire.
Yeah, exactly. I think, well, I noticed as well, I think Lisa has a lot more kind of solo stuff or solo verses in this album, I think, from what I remember. As well. So the balance is slowly getting more into things. I mean, but it's something that usually happens in all kind of girl/boy groups.
Frame to frame.
My first trip to the cinema to see a Bond film was Die Another Day.
The first one I saw in the cinema was The World Is Not Enough. I tried to get into Tomorrow Never Dies. I was just too young, and we got rumbled in the queue, and I was absolutely devastated. She went, "Oi, are you 12 years old?" There was a woman in the queue. I thought, I can't remember if it was the woman behind the box office or not. She basically did like a kind of MI6 job on me and scammed me, and went, "Oi, no, you're not getting in."
It doesn't sound like it took a lot of interrogation. There was holding a rope with knots in it to you.
Exactly. You know, we know how long I'd last in the field.
are you 12 years old? No. Yes,
I am.
It's like the stoning in Life of Brian.
I'm sorry, I thought we'd started.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.